It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Cheap Pennsylvania shale gas is providing energy to 35 countries, particularly Japan.
More than a year since Pennsylvania's shale gas first shipped to Japan, U.S. shale gas exports have more than doubled.
We'll hear more about it on this West Virginia morning. The abundant drilling of our region's Marcellus and Utica shale has created a glut of natural gas. That means prices are at an all-time low. Producers eager to find new markets now ship gas overseas. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips traces the path of natural gas from the forests of northern Appalachia to Japan, where cheap Pennsylvania shale gas provides energy in the wake of a disaster.
To understand why U.S. shale gas found a customer in Japan, you have to go back to March 2011.
Four and a half days since the biggest earthquake in recorded Japanese history and a merciless tsunami. And through it all, the most pressing immediate crisis remains the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant.
Residents fled radiation from the meltdown at Fukushima. Some never returned to their homes again. Japan shut down dozens of nuclear power plants, which had provided one-third of the country's electricity. Lacking its own resources, Japan always had to rely on fossil fuel imports. But without nuclear power, it had to quickly ramp up those purchases. Ken Koyama is the chief economist and managing director at the Institute of Energy Economics in Japan.
After 2010, everybody, including the Japanese government and industry, realize that the significance of shale revolution in the United States.
U.S. shale gas producers were eager to meet Japan's needs. I'm riding in a small fisherman's boat in Tokyo Bay at the port of Yokohama, where huge ocean-going vessels are carrying all sorts of things. Brand new cars from Japanese factories are getting shipped out. But one product the Japanese have to import is energy. And it's clear just from this port traffic how much energy that is. Large ships full of coal, liquefied petroleum gas, and liquefied natural gas, or LNG, are right now entering the harbor, some of it from Pennsylvania. Here in Pennsylvania, producers have tapped more than 12,000 shale gas wells in the past 10 years. This is where the flow of the gas begins. At this new drill site on state forest land in Tioga County, drilling supervisor Shane Giglio explains how the well will reach 21,000 feet into the Utica Shale, and that lies just below the Marcellus.
At the moment, we're averaging about 100 feet per hour.
The diamond drill bits alone are worth $35,000 to $45,000 each. But right now, the price of natural gas is really low. In the U.S., it sells for about $2 per million British thermal units. So this new well might not even start pumping gas until prices rise, or more pipelines are built to carry the abundant gas to new markets. One way industry creates more demand and raises prices is through exports. Right now, LNG on the global market is fetching almost $6 per million British thermal unit. That's triple what producers get in Pennsylvania. Karen Harbert is president of the American Gas Association. At a recent Chamber of Commerce event in Philadelphia, Harbert spoke about the value of exports.
We've got the cheapest gas in the world, and we're trading all over the world. Every molecule that we can export that supplants the mullahs of Iran is a good day for America.
So gas producers, exporters, small leaseholders, and pipeline builders and operators could benefit from selling gas on the global market. But not everybody is happy about the pipelines that feed those exports.
It's located up here to the left of us.
Before the gas gets to Japan, it has to travel through forests, backyards, and farmlands, like this cornfield owned by John and Deborah Swanson.
And goes under the road and continues.
The newly built Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline begins in northeast Pennsylvania and ends up here in Lancaster County, where it meets up with an existing interstate pipeline that could take gas to an export terminal.
We don't like it running beneath our feet no matter what.
Like a lot of landowners along pipeline paths, the Swansons didn't want to sell their land. But they quickly learned they had no choice. The federal government gave the pipeline company, Williams, eminent domain power.
And we took it to court into Philadelphia, and we fought it as long as we could. But you don't fight the federal government and win.
The gas eventually ends up at an export terminal about 135 miles south of the Swansons' farm. The Cove Point liquefaction plant and export terminal sits on a spit of land jutting out into the Chesapeake Bay. Owned and operated by the U.S. utility Dominion Energy, the vast complex includes a network of 32-inch pipes that surround large white cylindrical tanks. It's here that the gas is cooled to minus 260 degrees Fahrenheit, the point where it becomes a liquid so it can be loaded onto a ship. Since the spring of 2018, 100 ships full of Pennsylvania shale gas have sailed from here to about 20 different countries. Most of them ended up in Japan. At a plant in Yokohama, seawater warms up the liquid, turning it back to gas, which then heats homes in Tokyo. Takuro Yamamoto is with Tokyo Gas, one of the companies that has a long-term deal to buy Pennsylvania shale gas. Yamamoto says Japan is the largest importer of LNG worldwide, and Tokyo Gas now imports 14.2 million tons of LNG a year.
From Qatar, Middle East, Malaysia, Brunei, Sakhalin, Russia, and Cove Point.
Tokyo Gas helped finance the more than $4 billion transformation of Dominion's Cove Point plant from a gas import facility to an export terminal. Yamamoto says it's important for the company and Japan not to rely on the Middle East for its energy needs in case that region becomes unstable.
If we import all the LNG from Middle East, we will get in trouble with no LNG coming flowing into Japan or Tokyo Bay.
More than a year since Pennsylvania's shale gas first shipped to Japan, U.S. shale gas exports have more than doubled. American natural gas now supplies 35 different countries, and the U.S. is poised to become the third largest LNG exporter behind Qatar and Australia. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. A mix of snow and freezing rain this morning, cloudy and breezy today with highs in the 30s and low 40s. Chance of light snow tonight with lows in the 20s and 30s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, chance of rain or snow with highs in the 30s and 40s.
Hey everyone, this is Bob Thompson with a friendly reminder that time is running out to get your tickets for this year's Joy to the World concerts in Charleston with our guest vocalist, Jane Monheit. We're getting into the holiday spirit Thursday, December 12th and Friday, December 13th at the Culture Center Theater, and you still have time to join us. Get your tickets at wvpublic.org/joy.
Adding plants and trees to the landscape could reduce air pollution by an average of 27%, according to a new study. Specialists in environmental science, engineering, and geography spent 3 years analyzing thousands of countries across the country, or several thousands of counties across the country. They found that adding more plants is cheaper than most technologies at reducing air pollution. Roxy Todd spoke with the lead researcher, an engineer at Ohio State University named Bhavik Bakshi.
What drew you to this particular line of work of, you know, studying ecosystems and how they tie into the way we build communities?
Basically, my interest is in sustainability, and many times, you know, technology clearly is important and essential for our well-being. But it has also resulted in unintended harm. You know, all the recent attention that is going towards plastics pollution is certainly one example of a technology that, you know, is almost a miracle technology, but then it resulted on all this pollution that nobody intended. You know, there are lots of health benefits also of trees. People are looking at the benefits to cardiovascular health, to mental and emotional well-being. So if we include those types of benefit, then the value of natural ecosystems, you know, can be even higher than what we have estimated. One reason why engineering does result in unintended harm is because we ignore the role that ecosystems play in supporting our activities.
And how has your work been received in the engineering world? Are there colleagues that are like, oh, right, it's not fun to plant trees, I want to invent gadgets?
Yeah, well, so yeah, that's a good question, and it's been quite interesting. So I started working on this, in the sustainability area in 1999, so it's been 20 years now. At that time, a lot of people were very skeptical, and they were, you know, thinking, I think some of them voiced it, others did not so much, that, you know, maybe going off into this type of a research direction was not very smart, and, you know, maybe there isn't much that we can do here as engineers. Now things are very different. You know, now people think that, you know, this is very innovative and something that, you know, is very cutting edge. Obviously, engineers, you know, like their gadgets and so on, and I certainly do myself. But people do realize that, you know, there are some things that nature and the gadgets that nature has designed and developed over the millennia are very effective and oftentimes more effective and certainly more sustainable than the things that that we have been able to design through, you know, conventional engineering. So I think pretty much, you know, people do realize now that, you know, what is needed is to figure out, you know, how do we work together with nature, you know, and as I said earlier, you know, learn from it, but also respect its abilities and its limits. And that raises a lot of opportunities for innovation that engineering has hardly touched upon, you know, for at least 200 years.
That was Bhavik Bakshi, an engineering professor at Ohio State University, speaking with Roxy Todd. His study about why engineers should consider planting more trees was recently published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology. Wet, cool conditions are helping to slow a wildfire in Pendleton County that broke out on Thanksgiving. Brittany Patterson has more.
The Dry Hollow Fire was first reported early Thursday in the Monongahela National Forest near the community of Upper Tract. According to the U.S. Forest Service, the fire has burned nearly 1,300 acres of both public and privately owned land. No structures are threatened. The fire is about 60% contained, and Forest Service spokesperson Kelly Bridges says the agency expects fewer firefighters will be needed Tuesday. Burned areas remain closed to the public. The cause of the fire is under investigation. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
The town of Wellsburg in Brooke County will receive more than $1 million to improve its storm sewers, according to the state's two U.S. senators. Democrat Joe Manchin and Republican Shelley Moore Capito announced on Monday the money is coming from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. In a written statement, Manchin referred to the 2016 floods that struck much of southern West Virginia and the northern panhandle, where Wellsburg is located. Earlier in November, the senators also announced West Virginia would get more than $52 million to rebuild the Herbert Hoover High School in Kanawha County. The school was demolished last fall. Capito said in another statement that the new infrastructure will help mitigate damages related to future disasters. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration sent out 15 letters last week warning some companies that sell CBD about unfounded medical claims. Liam Nehemiah reports the industry continues to boom despite the FDA warning.
Daddy Burt Hemp Company in Lexington was the only Ohio Valley business to receive a warning letter. The FDA says the company is making unfounded claims, including that CBD could help children with autism. The company didn't return request for comment. Jonathan Miller is general counsel for the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, an industry group. He says CBD companies shouldn't make medical claims because of uncertainty surrounding CBD's effects. But Miller says the FDA is dragging its feet on rules that would give clarity to businesses about how CBD can be sold.
The only way we're going to get the FDA to act and act promptly is for the Congress to force their hand.
And the industry continues to boom in the Ohio Valley. The number of hemp acres farmers planted in Kentucky and West Virginia quadrupled compared to last year. And Kentucky is holding its first ever hemp summit Wednesday in Louisville. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.